All white?
You have the hat on today.
Yeah, I knew you were good.
Michael Chiesa, about to sit down with Luke Thomas.
What's up, man?
Look at this guy. Nice to see you.
Good to see you, buddy. How are you? What's going on, brother?
Good to see you, dude.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to this interview. I'm looking forward to sitting down and chopping it up.
The ashtray for his douche flute is like a really nice.
I'm sure it's going to get real interesting.
Too.
Oh, yeah. I'm from the Pacific Northwest.
That's all you?
It's IPAs all day.
There's also high noon, either watermelon or pineapple.
What is a high noon?
There's so many heads.
That's the exact
one.
He's from the Great Northwest. He's a UFC welterweight. He loves chocolate hummus. But despite all those factors, we love him just the same. Welcome to Room Service Diaries. Luke Thomas, Brian Campbell, and the guest of the hour, the one and only Michael Chiesa. Round of applause for Michael Chiesa, everybody.
Thank you.
Good
to be
here.
Mike the Mev, real talk. When we pitched the idea of the show, and this is the first time we're taking it on the road, we're happy to be in Vegas, but our short list of guests, of anybody, was like, we gotta get this guy.
Yes, you were on the short list.
Because he's one of us. Now, in the end, that's an insult because we're absolute pieces of shit. But he's one of us, all right?
I'm a fine fan of being a degenerate. So, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome. I cheers you. I can't drink alcohol right now, but I appreciate you being here. So, you're in town. Real quickly, are you doing some desk work for UFC?
Yeah, I worked the Sarukian Gamrot main event, which, by the way,
phenomenal.
Was freaking the best
what
fight.
What a fun-ass, amazing fight.
That's the future of mixed martial arts. Like, yes. That fight we saw in itself, and I'm sure we're going to unpack that at any point in time. But yeah, I did work the fights last weekend. I figured I'd just stick around for International Fight Week. So,
how did you get that gig?
There was a few moments where I think I had a post-fight speech where I said something. And then I kind of just started chirping about it. I think I did a few interviews and talked about it. I actually snatched Ariel's mic one time when he was doing like a backstage interview. I was like, give me your mic. And I started interviewing him. And then I think DC, he kind of had something to do with it. He took me to a dinner and sat me next to Zach, the guy in charge of the hiring.
Zach Candido.
Yeah, sat me next to him. And he's like, hey, do you know who that is? I go, yeah, that's Zach. He goes, no, that's the guy.
That's the guy.
And I'm like, dude. Just got.
I worked with Zach at ESPN a long time ago. Shout
did you really?
Zach. Oh, yeah. He was, you remember ESPN's MMA Live, which had an impact, right?
Yeah.
John Anika, Rashad Evans. He was the producer of that show, and I was sort of one of the editors who would see the final product and critique any issues. But that show launched so many careers, so shout out to Zach there.
Yeah.
But about your broadcasting work, I did want to start there because you're already making a very nice transition, even though you're in the midst, of the prime of your career. How do you gauge yourself? Now, we say on record, we like your work a lot on camera, but I know this game as well. And how confident are you when you put on the suit and sit there in terms of what you're putting on?
It took some time, honestly. It took a lot of time because you have to figure out what you're trying to do. Like, I eat, sleep, and breathe mixed martial arts. This is all I do. So when I have to break a fight down, dude, I have a list of a ton of things, X's, O's, intangibles, all sorts of stuff. And I can't express all of that. So it took me time to figure out, like, hey, you got to pull just a couple things and stick to those points. Because when I would overwhelm myself, and they're in your ear, and I didn't understand terminology of rap, layout, all this stuff. And so I'm, Jack John, and like, you got to rap, stop talking. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Shoot. So once I kind of figured that out and got comfortable, man, it's been a fun transition. And it's very convenient when you're out here. Like, we're, 80% of my shows are at the Apex. So it doesn't disrupt training. It doesn't disrupt, what's ultimately the most important thing, which is my competitive career. But I mean, I just come out and basically work at that show and train.
I mean, it's a good advertisement too.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. And I'm glad the pieces came together for it. My manager had a big part in that too. So
Shout out to Danny Rube.
Really? Really? He had a heart part in that, did he?
Yeah. I mean,
I'm skeptical hippo eyes.
He has, he knows what I want. He him and DC are buddies. And so I think he did a good job of kind of planting the seed for me. And I had to just kind of find those opportunities when you're brushing shoulders with the right people and try to make an impression. And
do you want to do commentary?
Yes, I will be a UFC Octagon side commentator 100%.
That's the goal?
That is that's always been the goal for me. Like, I don't want to just be a UFC champion. Like, I put everything into this sport, and it's like, so I want, this is all I want to do, And I've been blessed that my trajectory is headed that way. So it just comes in due time because commentating takes so much work. Like when fans bust,
when they bust
their balls, it drives me up the wall because these guys prepare so much. Like just to do a desk show where you're only highlighting a few fights, where I just have a few 30-second B-rolls to talk over and an open discussion just like this. That's easy. But to be there, to have your facts in the back of your mind written down in front of you, to know their opponents, how they won. And just to have the knowledge to be able to broadcast, to be ultimately be the narrator of these fights, it takes so much work. So I hate when people bust their balls. And for me, if that call came now, I'd jump on it. But I'm not pushing for it like I was, because it's that is when you're really, I don't even know how DC did it. For him to be a commentator while he was competing and everything else he does.
Well, according to Dom Cruise, the reason why is because he doesn't watch film. So
yeah. Also, we don't do the same kind of work, but when me and BC roll up to the desk, it's usually on a fair amount of edibles, so we just kind of wing it on there.
That makes preparation a little bit easier.
I will say, though, that like the one thing I have about MMA commentary, and it's not specific to anyone in particular, because this is just true across the board. Dude, MMA commentary, it's all sports commentary is hard.
Yeah.
But baseball gives you a little bit of time to like work into it, and you can weave a narrative, and you're not like on the gun about what you have to do all the time. Of course, I'm sure I'm wrong about some things. But MMA, like, dude, you miss so much until you have a chance to kind of review it and think about it. And so to react quickly to what you're seeing every time and getting it right, it's not that easy, actually.
Not to mention, if you're sitting down calling a fight, so I do commentary for LFA. That's kind of where, between the desk work and getting my reps, thanks to Ed Soros, he gave me a shot to be on their commentary
team. And those reps you're getting there, by the way, are going to be the most invaluable thing to get you to that next level.
It's true.
Yeah, but it's good to get comfortable. But it's true. It's when you're watching a fight, it's hard to stay just staring at the fight while you're talking. Like, you want to make a point, turn to the guy.
Right.
And in this sport, it's not like baseball. You hear a guy hit a baseball, you can turn real quick. You don't know what's going to happen. I can turn to say one word, and in a flash, a fight could be over, and you can miss it. Even Paul and I were talking on UFC Roundup. Shout out to UFC Roundup. If anybody has a list of mine and Paul Felder's podcast, you want to check it out. It's great stuff. Sorry, I'm advertising on your
God,
show.
God, you suck. Get the fuck out.
I told you I was a degenerate. This is what I do. But he even said he didn't even know in the moment that Gamrot got dropped to the spinning back fist.
On round four.
Yeah, right. Because he was like in the midst of a conversation.
I was wondering why the booth didn't really react to it.
I think there was the angle. I mean, obviously they're very in that fight. I mean, they're firing on all cylinders. But it's like you went, just like you said, you're making a point or an angle. Like it's hard to kind of, like a baseball game, you're up high. A football game, you're up high. Like you can see everything as it's happening. A fight, you can miss it because of a fence post. You can miss it because of just a ref. Miss it trying to make a point. So. But yeah, things happen so fast when you're octagon side. It's crazy.
How are the checks?
They're good. Yeah, I can't complain. I'm fine.
You're so full. Dude, they're great.
Yeah, they're great. It's good. It's nice. It's like when
TV money is stupid money.
But it's like you got to keep it humble. You know what I mean? It's as much as I want to say it's a career because I've been in the UFC for 10 years. I've been at this for 14 years. I do believe it is an opportunity. So especially in these instances where you're working television. The UFC could sell to, they could go from ESPN back to Fox, and they might just be like, we're done with these guys. And that would be out of the UFC's hands, maybe.
I don't have any idea.
Yeah.
Do you know how much Rogan makes?
I have no idea.
Why are you obsessed with what Rogan makes?
I know.
Because, dude, it doesn't get much higher than that.
I'm more obsessed with the exact height. I'm going to go 5'3".
No, he's taller than that. He's probably about as tall as Rube. I'd say they're around the same height. But
so 5'4". We're roasting. He's giving us the middle fingers.
He's like, I wrestled at Oklahoma. He'll double leg this shit, all right?
When did you start working with him?
I started working with Danny. It was around the time, I think our first fight was Benil. Benil was our first fight. So I met Danny on the road. I just met him in passing because he was at a lot of UFC events. And I didn't have any friends then, but I saw this guy there all the time. So I kind of buddied up with him. And
any port in the storm. I know
and
that
he, we hit it off, and he was representing two guys, Matt Grice and Sun Tzu, and I think Holtzman came in the mix at one point. But there was no Ruby Sports and Entertainment. There was no management group. It was just him doing this just for his buddies. And I was signed with a different agency, and I was unhappy. And I reached out to him and was like, I know you don't really manage guys, but I don't trust anybody in this business, and I'm not saying that I feel the same now. I'm good friends with a lot of the managers in this business, but at the time I didn't know anything. I only knew one, and I was on the outs with him. And I just asked him, I was like, I trust you, dude. And to this day, it's We have our friendship, and that's what kind of forged the business relationship, but that still will always come first.
Yeah, Danny's my favorite because he won't stab you in the back, but he will stab you in the face.
Yes, he will.
That's tough. I don't know Danny's background, but you know, we have this thing like people hate people that do the Irish exit. That's why I do the Lithuanian exit, because you tell them in advance, I'm leaving you. I'm getting up. I no longer want to be
here. This is his way of saying,
okay?
By the time the edibles have kicked in, he just leaves the dinner.
We could talk to you about a million things, but when people hear Michael Chiesa, they think Spokane, Washington.
Yeah.
In fact, you probably got some crazy fans. We got crazy fans at Morning Combat, and we did a live show a year ago from now in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. and it was Luke and I drinking out of shoes. It was intense. These people are crazy.
Yeah, it was
one
stupid.
Guy drove, shout out to Aaron, from Spokane, Washington.
Yeah, he was Edgar Meats. I know you're talking about.
You know who the guy I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay, if it's the Aaron,
wait,
I'm
holy
thinking
holy shit,
of,
you know this
you
guy?
Know think, Aaron,
let me see, if what's his Twitter name?
I don't know.
Well, we're about
know.
To show. If you could slip in this earbud
yep,
to hear it.
You got it.
Let's go back to when we met Aaron from Spokane last summer.
Yeah,
hey,
Spokane.
Luke, want to remind you that I was the giver and you were the receiver of the sausage.
Yeah, that's from Spokane, Washington, Mike Chiesa. That's pretty much Gonzaga. That's all we got. We don't have anything else.
Now, shout out to our boy Aaron, who ran that Landjager across the country like it was Smokey the Bandit. Put it in Luke's hand. Just whether or not that man inflicted his own sauce into it to make that product. Luke did eat it and he loved it. But one thing he echoed on, Aaron did, that's all we got in Spokane. It's basically Landjager and Chiesa. That's
Dude,
it. That's all we got.
I met Aaron, so he owns Eggers Meats in Spokane. Great meat block. Great butcher block.
Oh, so this guy's legit, Luke.
Yeah, this guy's legit.
Yeah, we just thought he...
We go out to his place to get steaks
I had some
stuff.
Of the Landjager because I was so hungry and it was tasty. But it was just a dude who showed up and had a bag of meat, and I was like, he definitely ejaculated.
He's
meat,
a huge,
right?
He's a huge fight man. He's got a condo around here somewhere. But I met him when I worked at Budweiser.
You worked at Budweiser?
I worked at Budweiser.
Tell us this story.
Yeah.
How old were you?
I'm full of stories. This is a Spokane story. This is when I was 20, about 21 to 24. It's my last job before.
So you were a piece of shit just like me. I was still working.
Slanging
at 27,
dude,
I was still working in a factory. I'm not kidding. It's a true fact.
You're dub T just like us, bro.
When I worked at Bud, dude, I used to get so turned every day of the summer. I would go home at night and I would put on my work uniform, my Bud uniform, my shorts and my Bud shirt. And I would just sleep on my couch. I'd go to bed at like 2 a.m. in my uniform. And you got to be up at 5 if you're slanging cases. So I'd be like, boom, shoot up off the couch at 5, go right to work. But that's how I met Aaron is when I was slanging beer. So he was kind of there like when I was on my way up.
So
like,
did you deliver beer?
I was a merchandiser. So they dropped the beers off at the store and I just stocked the shelves, build displays.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah.
Great job for
degenerate. Did you get like product for free?
We didn't get product for free, but when it came down to company functions, you got your fill. Like Cinco de Mayo and St. Patrick's Day when you work for an Anheuser-Busch distributor is.
I feel like a lot of young dudes in their 20s want to work in the alcohol industry. I used to work in bars. After a time, you're like, this ain't that money.
And at the time, I'm such a fanboy. It was cool because it's like, I'm working at the Anheuser-Busch plant, all this Bud Light, UFC merchandise is coming through.
Not
so
bad.
You come in my house and it just looks like a, you know, just like a toy.
I want to talk some drunk stories, but to this point.
Yeah, I got plenty
of
them.
Well, I was going to say, you know.
I have a famous one that I'm sure everybody knows about.
I got a fledgling, you know, promotion/gym I'm starting called Factory Town MMA. And, you know, Mike Chiesa could have been like the poster boy.
Yeah,
he really could have. What is Spokane like? I've actually never been.
Dude, Spokane's great. It's we're on the east side of Washington State, so it's very conservative. So you think Washington and you think it's, you know, and I'm not a political guy, but I'm just saying people think Seattle when I say Spokane, they think Seattle. Yeah. No, it's the opposite. The weather's the opposite. The people are the opposite. The scenery's
the best.
So
you live
in
the desert part of Washington?
No, I live like on the east side. The desert would be like Yakima. Like
how many times have you ever picked like a tick off your back or some shit?
I just picked 3 ticks off my dog like the other day. No, I haven't got one on me yet though.
But like, is it like how representative of Spokane would you say you are for someone who's never been?
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. Yeah, I definitely resemble Spokane unless you're like a preppy college kid.
I mean, you looked even gnarlier to cut you off. You looked even gnarlier a few years ago when you had that mini curl like mullet going.
Oh, there was nothing that wasn't mini
with
that
the
thing
full
got
beard
long.
So Luke, he represents blue collar gnarliness.
Yeah,
give him his flowers.
I remember that one of the media days. Which one? I forget who you were fighting. Was it Brooklyn maybe?
The one did I show up in a flannel or the one I showed up in the fruity? Oh my god,
and you had the shades too.
Dude,
right?
Dude, that was bad. That was that's one of the ones that
was that
like,
late 20s Chiesa.
That was just stupid Chiesa. That was just me. Like, I don't even like saying my name in third person. It was just like stupidity at the time. I'm trying to be like talking shit to everybody, trying to stand out. And my teammate Sam was like, I never knew this.
Cecilia.
But after the fact, yeah, Cecilia was like, I cannot believe I fucking let you wear that out in public. You made me look like a total idiot.
Oh, we've got
Sam
a
and I dressed
it,
the same.
Danny
it's
Rube.
Like band t-shirts and flannels.
We got know? A picture? Yes, yeah. That was it. That was
Stay
it.
They sucked and I was delusional.
I remember I asked you about it. You're like, yo, this shit rocks. And I'm like, I'm
God,
not cool.
I was a douchebag. Some people would say I still am a douchebag, but I was definitely a douchebag then.
I didn't have enough wherewithal to know what was cool, but I definitely did one of these numbers when you were there.
No, that was bad. Yeah, Sam's like, dude, you made us both look terrible.
Why did your wife make you cut the hair? Or your girlfriend at the time? Or
no, I knew I'd have to sell out at some point to move along in broadcasting. And I think I could grow my hair out now and be fine, but at some point, like if you wanna play the part, you gotta look the part too.
The famous drunk story with Ally Quinta, how long ago was that now?
Oh, the tough one.
Yes.
With the producers. Yeah. Oh, man. It's been over 10 years, and that was fucking wild. That's like, that day is like when I forged my brotherhood with Al, because he's such a rigid New York guy. Like, you know, if you ask someone to, like, stop doing something or quiet down with a New York person, it's like, yo, tune it the fuck down or something. You're like, whoa, sorry, guy, you know. But that day, we finally became friends. Like, he's, that was fucking wild. It's crazy to look back on that, too.
He sold you a timeshare?
No. No, I there's only one time. There'll only be one timeshare, but it's on like the bloopers of the DVD,
yes.
Which I'm surprised it made that because we got in deep shit for that.
Did you really?
I got so drunk that day. Al, we got fined because like Al at some point like jumped in. So you know, these guys know like the sound guys with a microphone. He jumped in the pool, and so it like exploded in their ears. And there was one guy that was an audio guy, was a total asshole to us the whole season. So we kind of were taunting him.
He must have hated that job.
Yeah. So the producer Jamie came in. I was laying in bed. I was sick and I had like an empty pitcher. I'm like laying on my little twin bed flat on my back and she comes running up the stairs. She's like, you're in so much shit. You're getting fined, blah, blah, blah. And I sat up and like was like, I don't give a shit. Blah. And I like puked in the pitcher.
Every time I ask a drunk story, I always need to know in reference where it stands. To what extent is that closest to your rock bottom story?
That was like college kid type stuff. That was like, you know.
That's some Junie Browning type shit right there. Okay?
No, Junie Browning was a dick. Like, we were like just having good fun. You know what I mean? But I don't know if I have like a bad rock bottom drunk story. I think probably.
You have like.
If there is one, I probably don't remember it, which is probably good.
No, I got some real rock bottom ones.
You talking about like shit in your pants rock bottom?
No, I don't. Low. I don't have a shit or piss in the pants story.
Oh, I do have a rock bottom one.
Okay, let me talk. You go first then.
I can't. This is still to this day. There is a man that works.
Let me ash my vape.
Before I've been waiting. You've been letting that thing smolder this whole time. UFC Goiânia. I went there after I fought
Brazil.
Yeah, I went there after I fought Colton Smith. I went out with Cristiano Marcelo, and got pretty
the black belt.
Yeah, got pretty tuned up, and I woke up in somebody else's hotel room, and I had vomited. And I woke up and was like, "Where the fuck am I?" Like, kind of got mad at the guy. And this is somebody that used to work in MMA media, a prominent guy.
Oh,
no, it's not. Yeah.
Said it.
Yeah. Oh, man. They can bleep it out if they need to.
Oh no, it's yeah. I don't care at this point. This is so long ago. And it was not my fault. Like, I got tuned up and I went in the cab and fell asleep. And so they knew what hotel I was in. And his last
Dude, you're name, lucky nothing bad happened, bro.
Well, I was in good hands because one of the UFC employees had kind of came out and kind of guided me home.
Okay, you know?
So I think she was in like the cab ahead of me or something. So,
yeah. Mine's not quite like that. My rock bottom, I used to live in New York. And I remember we went out one night too. You ever been like drinking in New York City at all? Like,
not too much, no.
There's a famous place, I don't know if it's still around, but it's called Hogs and Heifers.
Oh,
it's where like Coyote Ugly is kind of based off of, because you go in there and there's like bras on the ceiling and everywhere, but it's all biker bar. And we got drunk as shit, and like we lost one of our friends, it was a whole thing. But I remember, I don't remember the night, and the only thing I remember the next morning is hearing a walkie-talkie, and then I got poked with a nightstick.
Oh my God.
And my face is like really hurting because it's laying on a doormat. And we tried to go into my friend's place, and I was sleeping on his doormat, and my friend was sleeping right in front of the elevator. So people had to like step over him, and so they called the cops on us.
Yeah.
And the cops are like, but my buddy had lost his ID, so they're like, "How the fuck did you get in here?" And we're like, "Oh, well, we live right here." We're like, "We'll open the door." Like, funny story, we don't have the key, and then we called our other friend who we had lost, and he had fallen asleep on the subway. He woke up in Corona, Queens, and on the phone, we just had a moment.
With
he goes,
Corona, probably.
With Corona. Probably with Corona. And he goes, "Hey, man, is this rock bottom?" And I was like, it's pretty fucking close.
Yeah, I think that our stories are similar because it just involves somebody being somewhere that they weren't intended to be.
I mean, BC, shit. You got some crazy ones?
I'm sure you got
them. Yeah, but it, you know, it ends up with me throwing up on a nude girl. And like, just, you know, just, you know, shit. You know, we don't have to do stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you know, that's cool.
So wait, so Sam Cecilia is, that's an Italian name.
Yeah, very.
Chiesa is an Italian name. Yeah. There are a bunch of Italians in Spokane, Washington?
Dude, what's crazy is down the street from my house, there's a restaurant called Camelini's, and it's famous because Al Capone actually hit out there back in the day. So there's a little area called Hilliard in Spokane, which actually used to kind of be like the little refugee for Italians from that era. And Camelini's was made as like a hideout because before, I kind of live in the back sticks a little bit, like on the edge of town. But prior to that, it was like totally wooded, and it was just like this cabin. It was just this little Italian restaurant for these wise guys, I guess. But yeah, Capone, it's like if you walk in there, it's part of their little history of Camelini.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I lived like a mile down the street. Which
how close is your closest neighbor on either side?
They're fairly close. I'm on like 5 acres, but I can see their houses, you know, but I couldn't live with anything less.
You got yard animals?
No, I just got 2 dogs and fucking bats. I got fucking bats everywhere.
There's bat. You raise them or they're
no,
just there?
No, fuck no. I hate
yeah,
bats.
Raising bats. Would
I
probably hate be bats. That would be the weirdest.
The
thing
only reason
said
I'm
on
saying bats is because it's summertime and I'm having to deal with them. Like if you're having this talk in the winter, you'd be like, "Do you have pets?" I'm like, "No, just 2 dogs." But since it's summer and I can hear those little fucking things yeah. creeping around, they
Wait,
make weird fucking.
Correct me if
noises.
I'm wrong. I interviewed you years ago. Did you not build a log cabin or some shit?
I bought a log cabin.
You bought a log
Still
cabin.
Still living it. Yeah.
What's it like living in a log cabin? It's the same, right? You got insulation and shit?
It's actually naturally, it insulates itself. It's crazy. The only spot where you lose a little bit of the heat or the cooling is just from like the joint, or the joists.
Cause you got AC window units or you got central?
Oh, yeah, I got a nice central unit.
Okay,
sure.
I was going to say, you dubbed to your shit and yeah. you got the window.
Hell You're the no. most You, Johnny Hendricks, and Brock Lesnar are the most American fighters of all time, right?
I do want animals, though, dude. I want, like, a donkey, you know, and, like, a goat. I want to raise a Highland cow and, like, not butcher it. Just have a pet cow. Like, imagine if you pulled up to someone's house and they're
Yeah, that's
their
weird,
cow
dude.
Just, like,
no, that's weird. That's pretty weird.
That's fucking sick, though.
You've seen I mean, my sister tried that bit for a while where they yeah. people, like, raise chickens in their yard. Like, yeah. oh, we have fresh eggs every day. It's like, yeah, you got fucking chickens rolling around your fucking joint. Yeah, okay, all right.
No kidding. Dude, my neighbors have...
What a
in
city
the city,
boy.
You can't have roosters.
Oh, you got chickens there, tough guy? You can barely mow your yard. You have a riding mower,
well, that's
you fucking
I broke
pussy.
That's because I broke the riding mower, all right? Okay, all right, yeah.
Have you ever lived next to someone with a rooster?
Have I lived next to someone with a rooster?
Fucking
no.
Probably because you guys live in the city. You're not supposed to have a rooster in city ordinance in most cities. Since I'm right on the edge of town, my neighbor's got like fucking 5 of them. There's nothing worse coming home from
Yo, I'm calling the cops.
There's nothing me. Worse than coming home from a rough night and you're trying to go to bed and the fucking rooster
and
starts.
And there's cocks going. Everywhere. Yeah. Look, no, is that
cocks
like
everywhere.
It's like college. Right?
He's
you know?
5 years old. I don't know if I told you that. That's who he is right here.
Yeah. We can talk about him as a fighter as well, Luke.
Well, and, I'm sorry. I want to get to know him.
And
fuck
a very, a very interesting fighter. Not only because he arguably has the best tattoos in the game, which Luke,
they are pretty
it
good.
Matters
Thank
to
you.
Luke Thomas. Okay, it's like him and Josh Emmett at the top of that
do
mountain.
You, do you have like one guy you go to, or
now I do? Yeah, I'm gonna branch out, but yeah, I stick to my one guy. Like he's a good friend.
Yeah, but
of
do you
good
feel arm. Like you might have the best tats in the game? Do you walk around like
Sean
like, with that BDE?
Good tattoos too.
It does, and he's I like his commitment to knowing what all those things are because there's in this day and age, especially in the fighting world, some dude will have a fucking koi fish. Like, what's that mean? They're like,
yeah,
strength. This koi fish is
like
a
Brock.
What, strength.
Like Brock,
Sean
what's that
Brady,
sword?
His body's tattoos probably tell a story. He could tell you why each one's there and why it serves a purpose. Like, I'm biased. I think I have the best because I'm not into Japanese stuff like that. That's cool. I'm not against it. But I have a fucking Sasquatch on my arm, which is 100% Pacific Northwest.
That's pretty badass.
With a fucking abominable snowman on my thigh. Like, I guess those are my dragons.
Yeah. That's awesome.
This is my dragon. This is my samurai. I don't fucking know.
They make you pay for them?
He did this one for free because I put together a shadow box with some signed gear for his son's ski team. And then I paid for this one. And I'm paying for it dearly because have you ever had your ass cheek tattooed?
Oh,
thank
that's
you!
His dream
yes!
Life.
Yes!
That's his dream, this dirt
so
hole.
So the answer is no, not yet. That's the plan.
He
the
sends
plan.
Me a picture of male ass
so
all the damn
not,
time on
so
text.
So mine's not full cheek, but like my Yeti comes up like, you know, fuck it. If we're going to get
yeah, let's see it.
I mean,
bro,
I don't know.
If,
I mean, you know.
Get how, naked.
Woo! I haven't even had a full beer.
Unfortunately,
so you can see
this
where it comes like,
perfectly.
Up my cheek here.
Yeah.
So I only got like bottom cheek. Dude, I was like every 10 minutes, I'm like, you gotta give me a break. And he's like, no. It, like,
you didn't use the numbing cream?
Well, here's the problem. With the numbing cream, it makes your skin firmer. So when you're getting a lot of color, it won't absorb as well. So like, He asked, I feel like weed makes it worse.
Yeah, I wouldn't
do
that.
You can't drink. I feel like tattoos are meant to, like, you gotta just hunker down.
You gotta be a real man.
Just deal with it. Like,
this is the only one I've ever gotten that was with tattoo cream. Other than that, I've had.
See, yeah, and so natural. Like when you pack on a lot of color, like they shade over a lot of raw skin. So once he kind of pounds in the ink that's like the, I don't know, the darker stuff, he'll put some cream on to get me through. Cause it's like, imagine getting, to explain for people with tattoos, imagine getting road rash. Okay, and then you go home and instead of putting a banding on it, you start scratching it.
Yeah.
A little bit, then you scratch it some more. It's like, it's not fun.
It's liquid fire is what I tell people. Getting it. It's liquid fire. You know, did you see Andy Ruiz, the boxer?
Yeah.
So he got all black and gray work, and then he was complaining to Canelo in Spanish that, because he got his whole ass done, the whole joint. And
he was like, basically got the anus, too. Like,
his literal complaint was that it was hard to wipe his ass because it hurt from all the tattooing.
See, that's not good. That's not good at
all. Yeah, I'm not here for ass tats on anyone. Thank you very much. What is your take on the most controversial tattoo debate that we've ever had on Morning Combat That, you know, good old Father of the Year candidate, Mr. Hibas, when Amanda got her UFC debut and she got a win by choking out Spitfire Whitmire, Dad got the tattoo of that moment on his forearm, Dad and Coach, for the rest of his life. And I showed it to Luke, and have you seen this shit? Just trying to celebrate, you know, like the late Kobe Bryant, he's a girl, hashtag girl dad, right?
Okay, what are you doing? You're so awful. Okay. He's like this dead person that was famous once.
What I'm saying is, could you overlook the fact that maybe it's not the highest quality technical work just because this man loves his daughter?
This V is for my daughter, so I understand that. It's a little banged up.
That's like, if you're gonna get that tattoo, like it's
you
the,
can't
the,
cheat
gest-
out on
the
it.
Gesture counts, but like you gotta go see someone good. To get a portrait of one face alone is tough.
Yes.
But to get three of them in a that's gonna cut that. Yeah. I admire the gesture, but I think that's gonna turn into.
Are you gonna have kids?
Oh man, I get that question a lot these days.
Yeah, mid-30s, bro.
Your elderly female relatives, not from a man. You know?
Everybody thinks we're nuts. We don't want kids.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
We don't want kids. It's just not in the.
No.
I'm so involved with this. Like, if I've gone this long.
Even the wife doesn't want them?
No. We're very career focused. We're very career driven. And as wild as I am,
that means you must have awesome dogs then.
Fuck yeah, dude. I have a dog named Stone Cold after.
Oh, that's pretty badass. Yeah.
Do you stunner him all the time?
No, but he stuns me with his fucking fat ass. He's 40 pounds. He stuns me with his little obese, round body. And then I got a big King Corso Blue.
Oh, so. did you buy from like a breeder?
He's going to judge my wife did before.
He's going to judge your ass now.
Yeah, I know. Mutts are cool. I grew up with mutts. Yeah.
I got a couple from the pound, bro.
Did you? From the mean streets?
Yeah, I got one.
Because that's where we came from in life.
From the dog shelter? I don't know if we came from the dog shelter.
Jake, the camera guy, has been to my hometown.
I got picked up by the Humane Society.
Yeah, right. That's the dog. Look at him. Someone tattooed him. Let's talk about your career a little bit. Where are you in terms of your existing fight contract? How many fights you got left on it?
That's a personal question.
I asked Max Holloway about brain damage yesterday.
That's fair, yeah.
We re-signed a new deal. Yeah.
Recently?
So, yeah, recently. After the last fight, too. I'm happy with it. Very happy, yeah. Can't complain.
So how many, okay, I'll ask this way. How many years do you think that would take to complete?
It depends on my body. That's the tricky thing for me.
Are you super banged up?
I'm not super banged up. I just have, back in 2016, I dealt with that. I had a little back injury.
Yeah.
Or actually a big back injury that pulled me out of the Ferguson fight. So that kind of has come back, kind of baring its teeth a little bit. So the biggest thing for me is, I have to learn to, when you're young, you take more chances. You fight when you're injured. You kind of roll the dice a little more. When you get older, it's like, is this really, I got to make sure that I get this thing taken care of before I acquire another injury through a training camp. You're always going to go in there banged up.
So but you also don't want to get to your moment and be hurt for it, right?
Yeah, well, you're always going to be. I can't tell you a single fight that I've not gone into with some type of injury. Like, it's to the point where, like, if I haven't gotten hurt in some way that's significant in a fight camp, I'll get to fight week and I swear to God, I'll be panicking. I'll be like, something bad is going to happen. When we're cutting weight or doing something stupid, I'm gonna twist a finger. Like, I haven't gotten injured yet.
Hmm.
Fuck, you just always kind of expect it. Maybe that's bad, maybe it's manifesting it, I don't know. But at this point, it's like, make sure your back is healthy. This is important. Like, I want the career. This is a perfect example. I wanna have the career that Forrest Griffin had. Won the Ultimate Fighter, won a UFC belt, moved on, and he continues to work with the company.
He's basically an ambassador.
He's a part of it, yes.
Right? He's kind of an ambassador for the game.
I want that career. But I see the side effects of like just maintenance going into fights injured. Like he's, you know, he left banged up, you know, and he'll talk about it openly all the time. So it's like, he'll even harp on me, stretch more, dude, take care of your body. If you're injured, if your shoulder's fucked, take care of it. Don't, you know,
Don't put
band-aids on things that need stitches, basically. Just kind of really, if something's bad, get it fixed. So that's the biggest thing for me is making sure I'm healthy when I get back in.
How fucked up were you all those years trying to make lightweight? Like, what was the, I mean, I know there was losses attached to it but when at the very end there, but like, from a physical standpoint, can you describe at what point you were like, man, fuck this. This is not fucking worth it.
It was that last cut. Because for me, it's like, when I started MMA, it was like still kind of, I always call it the military era. When I started training, it was like hard sparring every day.
Hard weight cuts.
10 rounds, hard weight. Everything was very extreme. It's a very extreme sport. So I was still kind of riding that up until I started to kind of get a taste of getting older, having your bones get a little denser, having not being able to lose weight as easy as you as before. Like I used to leave for fight week and have cheesecake with my family before I'd go to fight week and still make weight. Is that smart? No. But that last cut for Pettis, man, I came in too big. I was dealing with an injury and just like you always kind of feel like you're walking to a very extreme situation. Like weight cut day is always like you really dread it more than
what
anything.
Was the most you ever cut in a day?
I always did good like
day of or whatever?
Day of weigh-ins. I never really had big cuts, but I remember before I fought Joe Lozon and Mitch Clark, I had some real, and Jim Miller. I mean, and everybody.
And every fight you ever had.
Every fight's attached to some fucking bad weight cut story. And shit, even at 170 now, it's like, I only had one cut that didn't feel like a cut. It was the first one. And now it's like it's not as bad. But I'm just saying it's.
What's your weight right at the moment?
Oh, I'm proudly like 203. Like
wow.
Like I can't grapple and spar, but I'm going through a lot of like you know strength conditioning. I'm still lifting weights. I'm not gonna fucking. I don't get these biceps sitting on the couch.
Yeah, thick, solid.
As I'm pushing them up a little bit. But yeah, so I'm doing what I can, you know, and I like maintaining size. I think that's another thing too is when you're cutting weight all the time and putting yourself through it, you acquire more. I think my back problems I had came from
training.
There's nothing good that's going to come from that.
I'm small. Like I'm trying to do power cleans and stuff while I'm trying to cut to 155 pounds. Like I feel like that's how my injury happened.
Dude, you ever talk to Chris Lieben about his weight cuts?
No.
Dude, I had him on my show. This was long after he'd retired, and maybe he'd come back for like I think he did BKFC or something. Yeah. And I had talked to him, and he told me he's on pills the rest of his life to regulate his endocrine system.
Yeah.
Because he fucked up everything so bad from weight cuts, his body can't regulate it anymore.
See, and I'm glad I got out when I did, because I feel like I was getting to that point. Like, the Pettis fight was like, everything had to be perfect to make weight. Like, you have to be, at this point, during fight week, you have to be injury-free. It's like, everything has to
go. Does that mean literally no cheat day? That would screw up everything?
Well, before, there was a lot of cheat days. I was just young and stupid. But, like, as I started to get older, and more, like, most of all, I started falling in love with lifting weights. I never did before, you know? So I'm trying to get stronger and trying to get stronger, become a better athlete. But while I'm depleting myself, those two things passing by each other fucked me up. So I had the back injury, tried to come back, and I did against Kevin Lee. But I was like, I'll do no strength conditioning. I'll focus just on martial arts skills. And look what happened. It's like, no. If you're a grappler, if you want to be a power grappler, if you want to take guys down, if you want to dominate positions, get submissions, you can't be a skinny little bitch. So in order for
also,
me
like, to lift weights, you do have to eat. Like you have to walk
I didn't understand that, you know? So it's like even a guy like Charles Oliveira, the greatest submission artist we've ever seen. His skills are really shining as he's like gone up in size. Like he kind of is I feel like as a grappler, you're always like, I need to be as big as I can in the lowest weight class because that's what's best for me because I want to take guys down and blanket them. You know what I mean?
But here's one of life's greatest
mysteries.
No,
it's not true. It's better to be bigger.
You went from being a big lightweight to being like the biggest welterweight.
Overnight. That was the thing. It wasn't like there was like, well, he's okay for this weight class. I remember that Kimura you had on Condit.
Yeah.
Your fucking back looked like a turtle shell. I was like, whoa, where did this come from? It's crazy.
Well, that was getting with a regiment. Like I was kind of going renegade style, looking up YouTube workouts to do to lift weights. And I had a good guy kind of taking me through it, but I kind of went off on my own and coming to the PI, like getting in a regiment, like my body was like, if I'm gonna do this with these guys, like, you gotta make a choice. And yeah, the Condit fight, I finally ballooned up, like, gotta take creatine. Creatine's like, I can't believe I've gone this long.
Worked
for
McGuire, bro.
I never got to hit the creatine until I was like 30. I didn't even know.
Dude, what it, really?
Well, I just was never like, you
at
can't,
20 years
you
old,
can't take it, you're gonna get too big. So it's like,
yeah.
Okay,
no, at 20 years old, I was swallowing every pill at GNC possible. Yeah.
How bad is that for your kidneys, though? Did you ever have any moments where your kidneys just felt like they were just dried up and dead?
No, I never had that. I mean, you probably trained way harder than I ever did, so I never got to any points of extremity like that. But I was at GNC when they were still selling Ephedrine. Oh, remember Ephedrine? Dude. It was killing baseball players. I was like, that's the one I want.
Yo, it was killing records, old records.
Hold on, they want to offer you more beer.
I'll do another beer.
You want another beer?
Yeah.
You see, you want a beer?
Yeah, I think I threw my cup somewhere over here, though. If we can get one of the gas.
Hey, why don't you keep nursing that stupid red drink?
Yeah, what is this? You know, it's like some mystery. You took the label off. It's like, is this Paulo Costa's juice?
No. Yeah, it's somewhere low with.
We should make an energy drink, Paulo Costa.
Well, this is how. Okay, I'm such an old piece of shit that this has green tea in it to keep me going during the show because we're all.
Bro, let me explain something to you about aging. Now, none of us are pro athletes. Yeah. But in the way you're at now, 35, feel about the same. 36, yep. When you age in the way you're at right now in your 30s,
yeah.
It's arithmetic. Yeah. Buddy, at 40. It's exponential.
You just hit
it's
the wall.
I can't tell you how different it is.
Like, I may dress like I have high tea, but I don't think I do at all, to be fair with you, Mike.
No one thinks you have high tea, just to be very clear about that.
Dude, do you guys take, I don't mean to ask, I mean, if Luke's going to ask me how much fucking money I make, I'm going to ask, do you guys take tests at all? Like, let's get personal.
I'm thinking about it.
Yo, you talking about him cycling on a 2013 Mohawk Vitor style victory of life, bro. You know what I mean?
He's gonna make a run at powerlifting.
I don't want that. I just don't want my back to hurt when I brush my teeth anymore. That's really that's my fitness goal. That'd be nice. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's.
Have you thought about it? I mean, obviously you're fighting, so it's not really relevant.
Obviously, you're a pro athlete, so this isn't something you think about.
I've been thinking about seeing a doctor.
I mean, in the next chapter of your life.
Oh, dude, absolutely. My body's gonna be so fucked. I mean, that's just the reality. Like, even if I stretch and do everything right, at some point it's not like I'm gonna wait till like this day I'm out of the USADA pool. It's like, no, it'll be like once I start to fall apart and like I can't train and I can't do. I'm like, if I have a very physical lifestyle. You know, I like to grapple. I like jiu-jitsu is a big passion of mine. I'll always do that. I like to snowboard. I like to do things like that. Once my body starts giving out on me, and I'm like, all right, well.
Are you a less dangerous in terms of your own personal safety, Donald Cerrone?
I'm not even Pacific Northwest Donald Cerrone.
I'm a little bit.
Nail that.
Look, man, maybe we're slightly cut from the same cloth, but I couldn't snip that guy's jockstrap. He's a fucking lunatic. Wow. That guy's fucking. His stories are insane. He did a UFC countdown show in like. The first five minutes they're filming, they had a camera guy in his brand new Raptor, and he fucking flipped it. Like, the first 5 minutes. Like,
I don't know how.
I'm not even in that guy's ballpark. Like, but
you ever seen the Meow brothers in jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
You ever seen that famous picture? I don't know if it was Joan or Paulo, but you ever seen the picture of his hands?
Yeah. They're
and the arthritis in the knuckles, because those guys were big in gi. They did no gi too, but they were really big gi grippers.
Yeah.
If you guys have never seen it, Google Meow. It's spelled M-I-Y-A-O. And you see his hands, and this is a picture they took in his mid to late 20s.
No.
And the arthritis is, you cannot believe it if you've never seen it.
It's like having big pickles for fingers, dude. They just look all big and bumpy. And can't even, it's like, how do you still grip? It's like when you see an old jiu-jitsu guy like a Carlson Gracie, he moves kind of slow.
Yeah, dude, they limp.
But when they get on the fucking mats, his hands look bad, dude, but I bet when he gets to grabbing.
Yeah, I went to a Meow seminar, and I saw his hands, and I was like, what the fuck? But dude, then he would just like, get on the mats and roll, and it was like nothing ever
happened.
That's
those OG jiu-jitsu
guys. Those guys are
dude.
Old school cowboys, man. Those
dude, they really are.
Fucking real men. Like Marco Huas, real men, right?
King of the streets.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but you're entertaining.
Stop, okay? Don't don't be a bitch, all right? Mike, you've got actually a sneaky good resume, and I don't think people always realize when they put the club, like, I mean, you'd be fucking RDA. And you still got it.
Yeah.
You've done some really good things. But you also had that viral moment with Kevin Lee.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about my mom.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about your mom today.
I was going to say, you're lucky I had a beer too, because I would have perked right up.
Motherfucker,
here we go.
People care about that. It was a moment. Did you ever have any doubt that you were going to just fucking go make that moment happen?
I know. That was just, you know what? In hindsight, good old Kev, good on him for knowing how to get under my skin. Like, that's the one nerve you can strike. I'm a pretty cool-headed guy. And granted, lightning would not strike twice. It wouldn't matter. Somebody could go full Chaos Covington mode and start saying some volatile shit and I'd keep my composure. But that was the first time I'd ever dealt with that. We're like, wow, someone said something that actually got under my skin. So I got to give Kev, he might say some stupid ass shit. And I still think he's an idiot, but I got to give him his kudos. He got me good with that one.
Is that the only time you ever had an opponent who you were just like, man, fuck that guy?
No, the crazy thing about Kevin is we actually trained a little. We were not like we worked together, but we were in the same room at Syndicate a few times. So everything was like pretty cordial and passing. And literally up until the press conference, like I saw him beforehand, I'm like, hey, you know, handshake, walk away. Everything seemed fine. But the second the press conference started, I think we were both kind of raring to go. Like I said earlier, I was wanting to be a douchebag. Like I was like, I'm ready to get on the mic and start talking shit to guys. That's how I'm going to get to big fights. And that was like my first time trying to do it. And I attempted and I got like, I got 10-8'd. He talked about my mom and I literally ran at him and got punched. That's the worst part, dude. Is I literally ran at the guy and was like, don't you talk about my mom. And I'm the guy that got punched. I'm like, you fucking dumbass.
Did you get love though in certain circles for that? Are there moms that stop you on the street and they're like, thank you.
Oh,
man.
Dude, I'm a high school wrestling coach. So I'm around fucking cool ass wrestling moms all the time. And they were like, yeah, way to stand up for us moms. I'm like, fuck yeah. I'd do it again. I don't give a shit. And it's something like when it happened, it like I was like, oh, you know, it's not like one of my prouder moments, but like as you get older, like you kind of play into that role of those like comments. Like, look at Poirier, he's like the king of it. When people throw shade at him, he's always like, he'll go with it himself. So now it's like, it's funny to me, and I'm glad it happened. It's always funny. My mom on my 30th birthday got me a shirt made. She's like, don't you ever talk about my mom?
No way. Oh,
we took a picture, and then I sent it to Kevin, tagged him. I was like, hey, happy 30th birthday to me, you know. So I kind of play into it now. But he 10-8'd me, fucking beat me 2-0, the fight and the press conference.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
It's a tough career.
That's a fuck.
All right, so but speaking of which, so you won two, and then the last two you've lost two.
Yeah.
Where do you think you are? I mean, obviously you're still ranked.
Yeah.
Where do you think you are in your career right now?
Dude, I'm one. I go out there, it doesn't matter who I fight. I go out there and beat anybody and show who I really am. Like,
I mean, you were like a dark horse title candidate at the moment.
Once you switched, it sort of beating guys
four straight wins. Yeah. You know, and the Sean Brady fight's one I can hold my head high on. You know, like nobody wanted to fight that guy, and you know I took on that challenge, and I feel like he legit beat me, but I wasn't. It's like going through the fight, still staying in it, having my moment at the end of the third round, like.
You were like Valentina against Amanda in the first fight. That's what you were like.
He legit
fight,
beat
right?
me. That's the first time in my career where I just feel like he got me. You know, I didn't. Every other fight, I always feel like I beat myself. Like, I went into that fight very active. You know, this is coming off, you know, the Magny fight, Luque fight, Brady fight, three camps in a row, three camps where I'm healthy, feeling strong. He got the best of me. But every other fight, it's always like I beat myself. There's something I did to myself. I mean, it's always something mental. It's always
okay,
been the moments
that.
Where something happened whether it's within the fight or just something. That's where it's always been.
Because you were honest about that after the Luque loss. Because that Luque fight was the moment I thought you were coming on.
Yeah.
And there's still time and you're still coming on.
Oh, I do. I'm not sweating those last
two
fights.
But, bro, my point is...
I'm one fight away from all this stuff, all the
my
last
point is it looked
go,
so close.
Washed away. Yeah.
It looked like you were ready to seal it.
Yeah.
I liked your honesty afterwards.
Yeah.
What sort of happened in that moment?
I think for me, this is the instance of beating myself. It's not like I'm a mental midget. Like I've shown in my career, I'm one of the mentally toughest motherfuckers you'll ever see. Like it's the times when it's mental choices I made within the fight that they've cost me. Like, hey, go for the finish. Like really trying to push on the gas, kind of dealing with the stress of wanting to like put an emphatic finish on this win instead of like, hey, why don't you just go out there and beat the guy like you beat the last four? You know, do what you did before. And I just kind of got away from myself wanting to like try to capitalize on a big moment. You know, if I went 5-0 that night, this would be a really interesting conversation. Because at the time, I was kind of in the mix to fight Kamaru just from word of mouth between him and Ali.
Yeah.
So it's like that could have got me into the dream spot. You know,
you
spot.
Were the only one that hadn't fought him at that point. So I thought you could have potentially made a real leap.
And it was a bad mental decision on my part. You know,
you're in an interesting spot at welterweight right now because you got a lot of guys that have kind of hung around for a little while.
Yeah.
Your Colbys, your Jorge's. Kamaru's obviously still the top, but that cannot, for anybody, cannot last forever.
No.
And then you got a bunch of young guys, Chimaev, Rakhmonov, Brady.
Yeah.
It's an interesting time in this division. It seems like there's a new class starting to slowly push the other ones out.
People want to know which class are you in, the one that's
exactly.
going out or the one that's coming in, motherfucker?
I'm right in the middle. I'm kind of. It is kind of a weird thing. I don't feel like the veteran, but it's like, fuck, I have been here for 10 years. And maybe it's good that I don't feel like the veteran.
I still
much feel like a hungry up-and-comer. Like that. I feel like it's like probably how Clay Guida feels. Like Clay Guida, I've never heard him say at any point, like, he's laying off the gas from not
Absolutely.
Wanting to fight and get to a title. And he still, shit, he was on a good little streak himself recently. So, Yeah, dude, it's I've already hung in there with one of the best up and coming guys, if not the best. Sean's as good as it gets.
What was it? Tell me what it was like fighting him, because it was funny the way the fight played out. You actually had some success on the feet.
Yeah.
I thought that it was going to be I didn't know how the ground was going to play out, but I thought I was surprised at how much success he had, and not anymore. Now that I realize, like, whoa, he's really, really
he's
good.
He's gorilla strong. Like, that was one of those. Yeah? That was one of those instances where, like I said, I'll be as open about any of my fights, wins or losses. More importantly, the losses. I did not think that there would be a guy that would feel like that. Like, that guy has to be the strongest guy at 170 pounds. That doesn't mean he's going to go out there and do the same thing to guys like Chimaev or Kamaru.
Right.
I'm just saying, for that aspect of mixed martial arts skills or just skills in general, that guy is so fucking strong.
We had him in studio, and the only other guy I've ever seen like this. You ever see Evander Holyfield in his prime?
Yeah,
like,
he traps up where, to here.
Yes, just, where they almost rotate forward by virtue of how muscular the guy. That's what he looked like in person.
Dude, and you know when someone's really strong when you look at their back. You'll never see somebody that's fucking freakishly strong that does not have big back muscles.
You ever heard
they can have fucking skinny arms and legs, but if you look and someone's got a big back,
Ian Heinisch has Jurassic back.
Yeah.
Dude, it's the, what did Matt Brown say? The front is for show, the back is for go.
Yeah,
right? Dude. Oh, right? It's like more cushion for the push.
Sounds like
it's like it's an LBB thing, Luke. Definitely.
But the Sean Brady fight felt good to have success on the feet, though. I will say this. That was one of those fights where I kind of knew going into it, this is the one. Let's pick at him on the feet and then kind of force him into trying to make those engagements, but not in a offensive way, like a defensive way. Let's pick at him until he's like, fuck, I'm done with this. I want to grapple now. Like,
I give him praise for the win, of course.
Yeah.
But there are critical fans who feel like maybe you exposed him to a certain degree. Do you buy into that?
That's tough to say. Like,
you broke his nose first right away.
Yeah,
and he told me he had to swallow blood, and it was like incredibly distracting.
I mean, he fought through some shit.
I believe him in that sense. I broke my nose in an amateur fight before, and I know what it's like to have to fight when literally your blood is pooling up in your mouth and you're spitting it out. Like, it's, I feel for that because I've been there, but I still don't think it would have changed anything. I still think I would have came on. It's fucking hard in a fight to ride someone's back like that is not. Your body gets gassed out. Maybe not your lungs. It's your body just starts to kind of give out. Like, I've had fights where I've body triangled someone for 10 minutes, and third round, I'm almost on chicken legs, and I haven't even gotten punched, you know? So I still think the nose didn't make that big of a difference.
Where do you think Colby deserves to be ranked? I realize where he has been ranked.
Yeah.
But the big argument against him is the last relevant win was actually Jorge, who is certainly much, much, much older.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and honestly, who the hell knows what's going to happen with that whole shit between them and the court case? But I'm not saying we don't take him seriously, but I do wonder to what extent do you think that there might be a bit of an inflated sense of where he actually is.
That's a harsh reality he's going to have to face because the shtick doesn't really sell. You know, it's like, for me, it's like you're not going to be able to use that and get yourself in any more bigger fights. You're going to have to now fight somebody that has been in a pay-per-view main event that hasn't fought for a title. You're going to have to fight a guy like, or maybe, I mean, the only other one I could say would be like Gilbert Burns. Like, why don't you fight Gilbert Burns? Yeah. He's been in a high profile fight.
That's not an easy fight.
Good luck fighting that gorilla.
Dude, that him and Brady would be a fun fight. But it's like, at some point you have to realize, like, if you want to keep competing, you're going to have to fight someone like me. You're going to have to fight someone like Bilal. You're going to have to fight somebody like Chimaev. You're going to have to fight somebody that's not as marquee as these other guys. And it's just a harsh reality. Dude.
I think Colby should call out Chimaev. And while we can say what we want about his chances in that fight.
Yeah, good fucking luck.
Dude, that's a potential that's big high profile situation.
That's not what we're here to do though. Like, we're not here to like, that if the, he's the only guy that's actually a real scenario where you look at him and say, wow, that's, it's you want to shy away from that fight because he's so tough. Like a guy like me or Bilal, or Brady, it's like, we don't care. That's the big. That's the hottest guy on the market right now. I want to fight that motherfucker.
I mean,
how is he not jumping to that? Like, you got to face the challenge. Well, if you want to maintain your spot in the sport, if you want to maintain being Colby Covington, the guy at the top of the division,
you got to up the ante.
You got to fuck. And it was right in front of his face. He could have went and fought Chimaev. And even if you go out, as much as I think he's a fucking dork, and he's got me sitting up out of my fucking chair, it's like the way he fights, he's a tough son of a bitch. Like, he would go out there and give Chimaev fucking
damn right
fit if not beat him. So that's just a reality. And Chimaev could very well beat him, but I'm just saying Colby should have taken that chance, because if he's the first guy to hand him his loss, he's sitting on top for
dude,
a while.
You just
he puts
you
him down.
It.
Guess what? You jump Leon, you jump everybody else, and you can sit atop where you think you are for the next 2 or 3 years.
There's a win and a loss in that fight if it goes that way for Colby. There's a win for taking that fight. And we know from interviewing Gilbert Burns, it became like the highest traffic thing we ever did.
Dude.
Because people were so in on Chimaev because he's glowing right now. You know?
That's...
Our biggest one's actually Floyd saying beating Conor is easy.
Well, that's because Floyd sent me to hell over that remark I had about
him. He did. Floyd did say
that.
This guy, in Floyd's face, challenged him about the weakness of his resume.
You know, what I thought was I had an opportunity.
Floyd didn't love that too much.
I had an opportunity to make magic on the mic, and I knew it, so I went after it, all right? You know what I'm saying?
You fucking went for it. That's what I'm saying.
What is your, seriously, what is your proudest victory?
Man, I would say...
Yo, you can't be the RDA. That win was nice.
No, it will always
be. That's a good win.
It's a no-brainer. It'll always be the Ultimate Fighter finals. I mean, dude, that's my mom's birthday on the end of that.
Was it really? That's cool.
That was my mom's birthday on the end of that run I had dealing with the passing away of my dad and stuff. Yeah. Like, that was like, I don't even think, and I still, the ultimate goal is always win a world championship, but I really think that when it's all said and done after I do it and I compare the two moments, the Ultimate Fighter one will always be the best win. That was like, you can't beat that.
I don't mean to.
It's like a book was written, like, oh, your dad died, and now you're going to go fight on your mom's birthday. Yeah. Like, it's like a Disney movie. Well, I fucking lived through it, and it was, that'll, for me and my family, that'll always be like
it. It's
like Bambi.
I don't want to pry, but I
don't mind.
When my mother passed, it was sudden and tragic and unexpected.
Yeah.
Did you have a similar circumstance?
No, my dad had cancer. So before, I actually didn't go, I almost pulled back on the Ultimate Fighter because I knew my time was limited. So I was like, do I want to go through with this or do I want to be with my family? And he was just like, you got to go do this. Like, I don't care. So I had this. So I literally, the last time I saw my dad was at the front door of the house and he was just like, this is it. Like, and then a week later he passed away.
And you were on the show?
I was on the show. I won my fight.
That was a gift.
I won my fight.
I forgot about all of this.
Yeah, I won my fight to get in the house. Then my dad passed away the next day. Like within hours of after my fight. Like, hinged on long enough to know I won. He didn't see it, but he was just like.
But that's a dad move. That's like a gift he
gives. Yeah, the dad's supposed to do.
So that's your final moment, you know?
I when the day comes and I wake up in my hotel room with a world title sitting on my end table and I compare the moments, that'll never be beat.
That's
forever. That's like. That was huge for me.
I gotta say though, Dick, I wonder how the pressure feels to win now that you are in the commentary business a little bit. Like, you know, they obviously, I'm sure they're not gonna be, it's not a question of, well, if you lose, you're out the door. But it can't be false that they don't want you guys to win in those roles.
Oh man, it makes the team look good, you know, but it's one of those things, it's more, you shine through your performance. You shine through being, there's a lot of guys you could put up there with really high credentials. Like Daniel Cormier is one of the rare guys that has the best credentials in the sport, but he can speak really well. No disrespect to Henry Cejudo, one of the greatest fighters we would ever see, but he would not be good on the mic at all.
A little cringy.
Have you watched Eagle FC?
And I'm on mute. Love Chael though. Chael.
Yeah, Chael's a born star.
Henry, I can't handle, but it's not all about It's not about having the accolades. It's about performance. You get the opportunity, show that you can speak, and show that you analyze these fights and you take it serious, and most importantly, take yourself out of the equation. It's like you can't assert yourself into this is what I would do or this is. It's you give your analysis with you outside of the equation, and I think that's hard for some fighters because it's like. It's always about how would I beat this guy, especially when you're like doing things involving guys in your weight class.
All right. You can send me to hell for this, but you're open enough that I want to ask you.
Yeah.
Okay,
I said
go.
Before, you know, man, I'd love to see Colby call out Chimaev and do it now. What if someone said, I'd love Michael Chiesa to call out Shavkat Rakhmonov or someone like that and do that right now.
Manager. We're on the same management team. Yeah, that's not the one for me. Why? Okay. If for him, I'm not the one going to call the lower ranked guys out anyways. Like I'm still sitting atop, you know, in the top 15. I'm not going to, that for him.
That has to be a title fight, you're saying?
No, it wouldn't have to be a title fight, but it would.
A more organic pairing.
Something more organic, something worth more. More than just a fight. You know
What did you make of his performance? It was nice.
I am. I mean, we would have to go tit for tat as to who's the bigger Rakhmonov fan. I think the guy's stellar. I mean, it's like, in the world chock full of Khamzat Chimaev, like there's this guy lurking in the shadows that to me is better than he is. Like I think they have the same skills, but when you watch Shavkat fight, he has bulletproof composure. He might not be as funny on the microphone and have his viral moments, but Gilbert Burns couldn't get him to break stature and fight reckless. Like the way Khamzat fought him, like he should have fought a little more like his coach was saying to him in the corners, like, quit trying to brawl, be more technical, put the jab in his face, those types of things. Rachmaninoff, you could do, say or do anything. That guy is so composed.
Howard Cosell for him, yeah. to Ali. Luke was day one-ish yeah. that this guy's
first time
coming,
I saw him,
right?
I was like, whoa. And I'll tell you this, too. Doesn't matter what country you're from, yeah. if you wear dead animals on your head, you're a different motherfucker.
He still owes me a hat, by the way.
Right?
Danny's on the other side of the
you know,
street.
They,
serious.
They say
about,
that about my
any
hat.
Any culture
and
you've
too,
ever yeah. seen, including ones in the United States with like Native American populations,
yeah.
where they wear animal pelts, dude, yeah. that's a different level of dialed in right there.
Oh, dude, for sure. Not to mention, those are authentic. That's a real,
yeah.
that's a real wolf on his head. It's, yeah. not like you can fly, it's not like you fly through the airport like a coonskin cap, like, oh, this is cute. I'll just buy this little wolf hat.
No,
I'm on my way to the United States. Like. Heck no, they go out there and skin the thing out back and tie her up. It's
I know he's out, he's obviously from Kazakhstan and he's with Sanford MMA.
Yeah.
But you guys have the same management. You ever like, train with him at all?
I haven't, no.
No, okay.
I'd love to. I want to train with Armand. Armand was just here in Las Vegas and we eclipsed each other. That's another kid that's
Sarukian.
Dude, his balance on the single leg when Gamrot went... I my mouth hit the floor. I could
it's like wrestle
not...
porn. It's like going for the high crotch and running that pipe.
Yeah. Shut the fuck up. You are the worst human on earth. He does this all day. But in reality, dude, was that not, that was just next. I mean, it's hard to explain, but it was so athletic, skill-based, intense. And Gamrot, by the way, not relenting and finding it in the fourth and fifth rounds. Like, an unbelievable decision like that.
That was just a display. And I know that's kind of been the narrative after the fight is, that was really the display of like the next generation of fighting that we get to look forward to. Like that's what fights are going to look like going forward. Like
yeah.
that was something special for anybody that's a fight fan, just to see that display. But to that, like it just was so dynamic. Like everything on the ground and the exchanges was dynamic. The single leg defense was dynamic. The exchanges, everything was just kind of like a step above, almost like in a progression type of sense. Like wow, this is the progressive level of mixed martial arts. Like we get to look forward to down the road and. It's just like, dude, I openly said it. If I was 25, when I was 25 in the UFC, and I had to fight him at 25, I'd get fucking thumped. Like, yeah. I would have gotten my butt kicked. Like, yeah.
I do also the energy expenditure between those two at 155 pounds. You just don't see that a lot.
No, I talked to a kid that trained with Gamrot at Tiger, and he said that guy's just the goer. He's the guy in the gym that just endless gas tank, notorious for just having good cardio, and that was... That was like next level conditioning, dude, because everything he did was a big move. Like this, even the entries, the takedowns are big moves. The escapes from bottom, like Armand's really sticky. He's got like more of the Dagestan style where Gamrot just wants to scramble all over guys. And I'm like, how is this guy not toast? Like you just, how many back bridges do you do to get out of those positions? It's crazy.
Who are, sorry, go ahead, BC.
I was going to say, you clearly got a lot of work to do and you're ready to come back and I can't wait to find out who you're fighting next. But, you can beat anybody on any night. You've shown that flash without question. So, do you feel, you know, extra pressure right now in this comeback to your next fight?
The shitty reality is I've been in this position before. I know what it's like to have to go into a fight on two losses, and it's something that there's no higher amount of pressure I can put on myself than what I already do. So like. It being two losses, I put the same amount of pressure on myself if not more than I'm on a win streak. You know, it's like, it's not like I feel like I have nothing to lose, but I've been here before. Like, it's like what Chael said before, like, in order to win, you got to know how to lose. And that's a reality. You got to know how to,
that's
like.
That's brilliant, actually.
It really is. You have to know how to lose. And fortunately, I've got to live that. I know how to handle this type of scenario.
Max does that very well.
So come fight night, you got to just put it behind you, dude. Especially if you... When you spend enough time here and you put on exciting fights, it goes a long ways. When you bring your best product, like that's the most important.
And thing. I ask it to you that way because when I think of you getting back to the top, which let's be fair, you're a couple wins away. I mean, you're right there.
I could be one win.
I love your style against Usman. I just want to see what it looks like. You know what I'm saying? Like, do you think about that same thing when you watch him defend his title?
Yeah, he's stylistically one of the more intriguing matchups for me for sure. Like. It'd be interesting to see somebody really have to bring out the wrestler in him, like really try to be able to get him to stay engaged in some wrestling scenarios because he's pretty springy. Like he's a guy, you get him to the floor, he's gonna bounce up if you even get him there.
But is the wrestler in you like, yeah, I want to see that, I want to feel that, I want to see how I do?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Those are always for me the more challenging fights and the ones I run towards most. Like the Brady fight was like, fuck, this guy is supposed to be the better grappler. I always want to challenge myself against a guy that's a good wrestler or a good grappler. Like that's always. It's kind of like the style I have is the style I want to challenge myself against. I feel like it's the most it makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up a lot more when I gotta go.
As a fan of the sport, who are the fighters you like? As a fan, mm-hmm. as a fan, you'd like just like love to watch. I'm a big Izzy guy, Saryukin guy, Rachmanov
Ioana,
guy.
Ioana,
he's a Ioana guy.
I'm a big. I like Shavkat a lot, and I've been on him for a long time. I do like watching Aljamain Sterling fight. I enjoy watching. I like watching Adrian Yanez.
Yeah,
that's Luke
dude,
Skye.
Dude, I just interviewed him. We had a 45-minute interview about boxing and MMA.
He is a. That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's another one of those guys you throw in the categories with the Sarukians and the Gamrots. Like, he's showing that next level of MMA that's going to be the norm.
He's 28.
There's such a, it's a paradigm shift in where the sport's headed now and how, it's like, back when it started, it was like the jiu-jitsu guys, and then it's the ground and pound guys, then it's the strikers that can wrestle, then it turns into the athletes. And we've had kind of that, we had that for a long time, the George St. Pierre's, the athletes of the sport. Now we're starting to see the athletes that can blend the techniques at the same time. Like Israel Adesanya, amazing martial artist, but he's also a fucking phenomenal athlete. Yeah. I bet he could do a lot of athletic things on a track field. Or
you ever seen him dance? Like, no bullshit.
Even in the way he dances. But yeah. Now we're going to see the more extreme version of that. We're seeing that in Adrian Yanez. Dude, we're seeing it in Armand Sarukian. Yeah. Like, it's just crazy.
Yanez said something to me that kind of caught my attention too, which is, you think about like the guy, the next gen guys, his generation dudes. He was telling me like how many times he encounters people, and the word he used was that they're stupid. They don't have thoughtful offense. And the early generation of MMA has had a lot of aggro, tough as shit, some skills, no doubt about it. But now you're getting the guys who are real. Like, dude, Floyd, you can say whatever you want about Floyd. Fight IQ off the charts.
Oh, maybe the smartest.
Astronomically,
seriously.
Yeah, one of the best guys with fight IQ, especially in a sport when you can lean on that a lot. In MMA, and then this isn't me taking a shot at boxing, mm-hmm. but in MMA you can't just lean on having really high fight IQ. It's like there's too much stuff going on. There's too many things to compute. Like,
yeah, Dustin Hayes would have been a champion if that was
in a boxing match. You could have very high Floyd. Yeah, he's got the highest fight IQ for a boxer. I wouldn't say for a fighter, but for boxing, I think that's.
But Bud Crawford's up there too.
Yeah. Bud Crawford's good. Yeah, he fights from bull stance as well.
You know, Michael Chiesa's up there too.
Yeah. I'm working on the fight.
Get the fuck out. I mean, what are you doing here?
Get the hell out of here.
All right, here's one thing, though. I mentioned, we brought it here, so let me just bring it up. You're a disgusting person
I'm actually hungry,
who eats disgusting things.
What is this experiment we got going on?
So let me explain my side of the story. So one day, I don't know how I found out you ate chocolate hummus, which is just, I wouldn't hit you because you kicked my ass, but I do want to hit you over it.
Because you're Lebanese too, right?
My mom's from Lebanon.
Okay, all right.
And so here's why I want to pitch this to you, because you are Italian,
yeah.
And you know with Italian cooking, what's the secret to Italian cooking? They don't have a shitload of ingredients, but what they have is all high quality. Like, you have the right tomatoes, the right pasta, the right salts, the right oils, and you call it a day. Mm. Why are you, how are you another American who is destroying the heritage of the Middle East by putting fucking chocolate in your hummus?
Well, for
explain
one,
yourself.
I didn't put the chocolate in the hummus. This wasn't my idea. I just happened to be at Fred Meyer passing by, and I got some pretzel chips in my cart, and my fiance, now wife, saw this chocolate hummus, and we're like, let's give it a go.
Let me explain
something
to you.
We fucking love hummus.
My mom passed away a long time ago, bro. And you're a pro fighter.
Yeah.
But if my mom was around and she saw this, she'd beat your fucking ass. Believe that.
She's gonna beat your ass. I'm gonna make you try this.
All right, I'm gonna eat it.
Oh,
is that good?
It was probably like a dessert, Luke. You're gonna eat your
first of all, you don't even eat hummus with pretzels. Just number one, off the break, you're doing this all wrong. Just, I wanna point that out.
Somebody's been watching Cooking with Volk.
Get a decent amount. That's good.
That's a decent amount, right?
That's good, yeah.
Sorry, Mom. Don't. Oh, God.
I'm
going to
see you with this bag for a while. Oh, my God. That's a lie.
Mm-mm. Yeah, yeah.
This is all for show. This is good.
This is terrible.
This is good for TV. Yeah. I love this.
Dude, I cannot swallow this.
Yeah, swallow it. It's good for you.
Do you eat fucking cigarette butts and road salt? What is wrong with you? It's like, Michael, what are you eating for your weight cut there? Banana peels.
No, chocolate hummus. This is delicious.
Oh, my God, dude. I
highly recommend this.
That is so fucking gross. Let me wash it down with my Bang energy drink.
Wow.
And my refined palate. That's really bad. I want you to know that. It's really fucking bad.
No,
it's like a dessert. It's just like...
It's delicious.
Michael, I got to tell you, you're one of a kind, dude. You're a great asset to the sport. You're a funny dude. You're a smart dude. Take care of your brain. I mean that quite sincerely.
Yeah.
Because you're using it to great effect.
Thank you, sir.
And when do you think you might be back?
For me, I think early fall would probably be the most realistic. I got to make sure I just, like I said, when it comes to my body at this point, I got to dot my I's and cross my T's. I got to make a real run at this, and I could shorten that by not making sure that I take care of
so
this.
Like, so like third, fourth quarter this year, think about coming back?
Third, fourth quarter, yeah.
Well, we can't wait to see it, man.
I can't
We're really
wait
glad
to fucking
you stopped
get back
by.
In there, baby.
You were on the short list when we thought of this whole concept. Yeah. And
get this man a drug rug already. I mean,
yeah,
come
get
on,
this
come
man
on.
A drug rug. Round of applause for Michael Chiesa, everybody. There he is. UFC welterweight, UFC analyst. Anything you want to plug?
And complete degenerate. Don't forget. Yeah.
Before we go, anything you want to plug?
No, just shout out to my fans, my family. And I always give Danny a shout out, not just because he's sitting on the other side.
Okay.
Of the
also, we gave Danny a ton of shit. He's a great manager. Yeah, he's one of the few reasonable people in the sport. And honestly, your success is not accidental either. Yeah. Well, it's somewhat accidental, but that's, you know. Okay.
Yeah, that's all I got. But thanks, boys. This was great. Hope to do it again.
Well, there you go. Room Service Diaries. We're out.
Peace. Bitch.